Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mike Fouché is here. It's Wednesday night. We got a lot to talk about. Mike Fouché, of course, with the Daily Line. It's thedailyline.net.
Good to be here.
Good to see you, bud. A lot going on this week with Chicago Public Schools. Let's start there. From a Grammy Award winner who comes in and trashes the governor to the governor's CPS proposal, which is essential funding proposal, which is you pay for it.
Right.
And third, today, the Chicago Teachers Union saying, you know what? We may do a one-day strike.
Right.
There's a lot going on. Let's start with Chance the Rapper. He comes into town. It seemed like...
He comes home.
He lives here. See, it seems like he went into a meeting, a weekend meeting with Governor Rauner, a Friday meeting, with expectations. And it didn't seem to be met.
No. And he, as he said, he was disappointed and frustrated, is exactly what he said. After they had that meeting on Friday, and then supposedly, well, not supposedly, Chance the Rapper, Chancellor Bennett, said that he had talked to the governor on the phone over the weekend some more, and that he didn't feel like anything was really being moved, and that really the governor wanted to talk about how it is that Chance could find a way in order to fund CPS through other means. But Chance really wanted to talk about how does the state pony up money in order to
Was the governor, I mean, this story's been around now for 4 or 5 days, but as it settles, was the governor, did he misread what this meeting was supposed to be? Did he think it was like a meet and greet with a famous singer?
I think he really had no idea who he was talking to, because somebody asked him, I think on Friday or Saturday, what are your favorite Chance the Rapper songs? And he said, I think he's a really terrific musician. I like all of them. And you're just like, come on, man. No problems?
Well, maybe he doesn't know the songs. Come on. That's okay that the governor of Illinois does not know Blessings, right?
You know, fine. He didn't get the DVD of all of the culture he needs to know from the last week that they prepare in his office. He didn't watch it.
But, I mean, it smells of not understanding the pull that a Chance the Rapper has, because Chance is a very political artist. Throughout his career, he went on Saturday Night Live.
His dad is an advisor to Rahm Emanuel, was, I think, the deputy campaign manager for Barack Obama when he ran for Senate in Illinois. You know, this guy, he's no dummy. You know, he knows what he's talking about.
Too.
He understands the game. He gets how it works. And I think that he went in to try and push the dialogue. And what's interesting is that Chance ran into the exact same wall that everybody else has run into, where Rauner said, hey, yeah, Chicago should pay for it. Nobody else is going to pay for it. And, you know, I think that what's interesting is that you have a person who is encountering the exact same problems, who is a third party and is not wrapped up in all the politics, is never going to run for election, we hope. Please don't run for office, Chance the Rapper. And I think that
he's a pretty prolific guy.
Credibility a little bit.
I think he could do albums and he could be alderman. So I'm not worried.
Please no.
Well,
no,
I
stay
mean,
pure.
Does the controversy, which did grab headlines and grabbed headlines not just in Chicago media, it was national. Down to the idea of being monologues for late night talk shows. Does that put any pressure on Governor Rauner to say, you know, I got to start thinking about what I'm going to do with CPS funding?
Well, I think there definitely was pressure that went on the governor. I mean, his team cobbled together this really not very good memo over the weekend that they released that suggested that there were a couple of options that they were looking at. One, which is that the state could pass legislation that would allow Chicago to do a TIF sweep, take money out of TIFs in order to pay for schools, which is really only a one-time solution.
And it's not state funding. That's saying city. One thing you could do is pay for it yourself.
Right. And then the other option was another way that the city could pay for it by itself, which is to increase the amount of money.
So essentially telling Mayor Emanuel how to do his job.
Here are two ways that you can pay for it yourself. And, you know, that is really kind of what Rauner wants to get away with. And I think that the longer this pressure goes, and the longer it goes, the more likely it is that Chicago is going to have to figure out a way to pay for it.
Now, we've heard a couple of things that have
And we're talking about $129 million.
That's where we're short. We've heard, and Mike, it's like broken record time. I mean, we've been on the air at this time of year last year talking about the same amounts of money that were short.
Year? It seems longer.
Even longer. But the idea that every year we're talking about CPS coming in short. There are a couple things on the table. One rumor was that possibly we could see the school year shortened, that they could end in 13 days. And now you're hearing the Chicago Teachers Union, which is upset with the fact that These budgets have been slashed at the local, at the school level.
Yep.
Teachers are being pinched to do more.
Yep.
They're saying this is unfair to us. Maybe we need to take action and are possibly looking at a one-day strike in May.
You know, great. I think that they're limited. The teachers are limited in terms of the tools that they have, right? They could strike or, I don't know, you know, maybe they could lobby Springfield a little more, but there's nobody that they're going to talk to that, you know, I don't think the Republicans in Springfield are going to be very receptive to what the Chicago Teachers Union might have to say. I'm at a miss why the teachers are talking about a strike. I'm not sure how that advances the dialogue.
They seem angry. I mean, I understand.
They're mad. I get it.
And you get it. You know, Karen Lewis was in here, and what she talked about was we made a deal, and in less than the ink was not dry, and they were announcing furlough days.
Right.
And this continues to be a trust issue where every time they think they have a deal, the CPS
right.
turns in and sort of
right.
does something to undo the deal.
Right. The teachers are very focused on the idea that CPS is hashtag broke on purpose. That's what they do all the time. That's what they put into their tweets. And, you know, I think that it is true that CPS is not funded as well as it could be, but we're in a situation where CPS, we've talked about this 1,000 times, they can't borrow more money because yeah. already they're paying usurious rates. CPS won't tell us what rates they are, but it's probably around 12-15% that they're borrowing at. And then the other is that they can't raise taxes more
right.
because their tax property taxes are capped. So there's not a whole lot of choices.
All right, let me ask you this sort of ideological question. It feels like you heard CTU and Governor Rauner, although, you know, they don't see eye to eye at all, of course. But they both seem to be borrowing tenets from progressive politics, this idea that get the TIFs to pay for it, find some of this money that's put in different places. It's not in general operating. Maybe it's community renewal projects, other places. But this broke on purpose rhetoric that has been, you know, trumpeted from Tom Tresser's to the progressive
yeah.
alderman, that this concept that there is money, you just choose not to spend it. Does Governor Rauner politically, is that a good message to go after Chicago to borrow from
yeah.
the sort of the left, the progressive
yeah.
left with
yeah.
the same argument?
It's a good argument for him that Chicago could come up with the money on its own. I mean, really, the continuing problem is that there is no transparent accounting of how much TIF money there is, and Rahm Emanuel refuses to do it. Because as soon as that he does, it opens up the books and now everybody can really know exactly how much money there is that's available. But, you know, everyone that I've talked to that seems to know something about TIFs that have worked in government and not worked in government is that it's hard to believe that it's enough money that could really make the long-term difference
right.
with CPS over time.
Mike Fouché is with the Daily Line. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got to talk about Day Without a Woman. Ann Ladke's going to join us from Women Employed. We'll talk about how it went. Also, just sort of, you know, the controversy that was around it. It's a very limited controversy, but the idea of the concept being classist, where many women couldn't actually take action and go on strike today
right.
because they can't afford to. Mike Fouché in studio, Ann Ladke going to join us here on The Download. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mike Fouché from The Daily Line in studio for his regular Wednesday night check-in. I was
yep.
going to say check-up.
Check one of those too, man.
One of those. All right. Today was a big day. A Day Without a Woman was the movement for International Women's Day. This is something that we knew about, has sort of been talked about since the big march that was on Inauguration Day or the day after. This idea of a day without a woman to sort of put the spotlight on what women do in the workplace and also how important they are to, I believe I heard the quote today on WGN Radio News, they make the world work. So we'll talk about that. Ann Ladke is joining us now. She's the Executive Director of Women Employed. Ann, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here, Justin.
And talk about this event. Is this a successful day for the women's movement, the Day Without a Woman?
Well, it certainly looked to me from what I could see of women all over downtown, at least when I was out, wearing red, and reports from news reports from around the country that indicated that lots of women observed the day in various ways with community meetings and staying away from work if they had that opportunity.
Right.
and staying away from shops that weren't owned by women or people of color.
There seem to be two ways to do this. One was to not go to work and sort of like the idea of a strike, but the other was to just shop or avoid shopping at places. Talk about the twofold approach to this. Do you feel like that today's action did that, was able to accomplish the idea of raising awareness for issues?
It certainly looked like it did to me, Justin, from the conversations I had, what I saw on social media, and what I saw in the news media. And I think it also had the added benefit of drawing a lot of men into the conversation about women and their dual roles as working women and as caregivers, and how men and women have to manage those responsibilities, the importance of women's work to the whole family. So it seemed to me that it really stimulated conversation and awareness. And so by that standard, I would certainly call it a success.
And I'm curious, you know, for somebody who is busy trying to raise the standards for women in the workplace on a regular basis, how do you put together this idea that there's a day to promote women and awareness of women's issues when we just had an election for president, and the president had a lot of misogynist statements that he made, and even more so, a lot of people who voted for president said, I just don't care about the statements that he made. There's other things that are more important to me.
Right. You know, I think that this election was a tremendous shock to a lot of people. I think that, you know, as I know you've discussed and others have discussed, it really shows often sort of the divide between people who view the world a certain way and people who view it another way, and viewed the president's comments about women as completely repugnant, and other people who were willing to ignore it because they were concerned about issues that they thought were more pressing for them. So it is, it's a very, very unsettled time. And I think what it also seems to me has occurred with this huge surge of activism that we're seeing, both small scale and larger scale, like we did on the day of the march, I think what we're seeing is people realizing that it's important to make your voice heard, and that you can't just sit by and, you know, wait and hope something happens, or decide, oh, gee, I don't really like either of these candidates. I'll just let whatever happens happen. And, you know, I think that people are very concerned now. And so they're trying to do something to improve their communities, to fight back against the kind of misogyny and xenophobia and racism that were expressed by the president and his surrogates. So this is, you know, it's a circumstance that we at Women Employed would view as obviously very negative for the future of women's economic advancement. On the other hand, if this had to happen, we're seeing a tremendous amount of activity on the part of women and men who want to create a different kind of country than the one that the president is talking about.
And, you know, there were a lot of thought pieces that came out in the last week, and people coming out with a little bit of controversy around the idea that this idea, today's action, was classist in the way that, you know, people with money or affluence could be free to strike, where women who are in working class situations or jobs that are, you know, day labor and things of that nature, they can't afford to do that. They can't afford the loss of income. What do you say to the idea that controversy came out before this action?
Well, in a way, that controversy is useful, I think, Justin, because, the organizers of this effort today were very clear in all their materials and all their communications that they recognized that many women would not be able to stay away from work because they're barely able to feed their families earning what they earn in, you know, millions of jobs that we all depend on. So it wasn't going to be possible for them to participate in that way. And I think that that's really an important thing for people to think about. That, yes, there's a big gap between people who can afford because they have a day of vacation or they can take personal leave, and women who don't even have, you know, a paid sick day, much left a vacation day. So I think actually it was also awareness raising in that sense. And I don't think the idea of it was classes. It's an idea about how to raise awareness and publicize. But I think there was a lot of attention to the notion that many women couldn't participate in that way, but they could wear red, they could avoid the shopping, and they could express solidarity with other women in their situation.
Ann Ladke is the Executive Director of Women Employed. Ann, thanks so much for taking some time out tonight. We appreciate it. And I'd love to get you in studio. We can do a longer conversation about the issues that you work with at Women Employed. Appreciate it.
That's great, Justin. Thank you.
Ann Ladke. Mike Fouché from The Daily Line. Last word?
She's sharp.
Yeah. It's an interesting day, and I think that there's something to be said about activism, and especially when it comes to gender issues.
I think it's a much bigger wedge.
Women Employed is doing. I mean, we're going to see what's happening and hold President Trump to mandatory leave, paid sick leave, the deal that I had a segment on the show. I can't remember who it was, but we talked about the idea that the fight for 15. A lot of the people who are trying to raise the minimum wage, who work in minimum wage job, are women of color.
Well, I think this health care bill that's moving through Congress is interesting, too, since there's a lot of talk that it may not help people that are older, and women tend to live longer. So this is a women's issue, too.
We didn't get to police. We'll get to it next week. Mike Fouché, great to see you. Mike Fouché from The Daily Line. You can check it out at dailyline.net.
Great to be here.